You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
What a day. Eric Holder has been held in contempt, at least by the committee. We'll see what happens with the entire House. This would be the first cabinet officer in history. I want to share my thoughts on that with you. Question, why wasn't Karl Rove arrested? We're going to get into that in just a minute. The defenders of patriarchy are lashing out again. We'll get on into that in our second hour. And in our third hour today, Alan Grayson, former congressman, is going to be here about the Obamacare decision and what it's actually quite extraordinary how much money has been spent trashing Obamacare by people who don't care about Obamacare. It's a proxy for trashing the president. But this way they can do it and maintain their 501c3 status. We'll be talking about that in the third hour. It's really, really an extraordinary story. And Congressman Alan Grayson will be here to tell us all about it. Nancy Pelosi, meanwhile, says she could have arrested Karl Rove anytime. Do you catch this in the news? I mean, she just, you know, when Holder was held in contempt by Daryl Issa, by his committee, and now John Boehner says he's going to hold a contempt vote on the floor of the House. And, you know, in all probability, given the Tea Party makeup of the House of Representatives right now and the fact that Republicans control the House, they will probably find him in contempt. The first time since the George Washington administration, it didn't even happen then. I mean, literally the first time in our nation's history that a cabinet officer will be held in contempt of Congress. And he's not really in contempt of Congress. But, you know, this is anything they can do to win this election. Now, back when Bush was president, there was a long list of crimes that Karl Rove was implicated in. I mean, a long list of crimes that Rove was implicated in, from helping set up secret overseas prisons to torturing people to outing a CIA agent. That was the one that he was actually, you know, they were doing planning inside the White House for his stepping down or going to jail, outing a CIA agent, to lying to lead the United States into an unnecessary war, to secretly and illegally wiretapping American citizens. I mean, Karl Rove has this long list of crimes. In fact, the one that made me crazy, and I went off on this at some considerable length back in 2008 when this was going on, in the summer of 2008. This was a campaign season. You had John McCain running against Barack Obama, Senator McCain against Senator Obama, and John McCain was not doing all that well in the polls, and something happened that gave him, as I recall, it was the only time during the entire campaign when he was actually ahead in the polls that gave him a bump. And that was that John McCain went on national TV and started trashing President Obama for being soft on the Russians. Now, let me lay this out. The country of South Ossetia and Abkhazia, these two little countries that are north of the Republic of Georgia, not the state in the United States, but the country in the Crimea. These two little countries had declared their independence. In fact, South Ossetia first declared their autonomy from Georgia back in November of 1989. And it just kind of festered through the 80s and the 90s and through 2005. And at that point, Russia, in January 2005, Russia said, okay, you know, we'll kind of acknowledge South Ossetia. And so anyway, we get up to March of 2008. Russia's parliament actually urges the Kremlin to recognize the independence of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. There you go. And South Ossetia in April says, no, we're not going to have a power sharing deal with you. We are going to be independent. Now, you're asking yourself, you know, what does this have to do with us or with Barack Obama or with Karl Rove or Daryl Issa in contempt of Congress? Well, here's how it played out. Back during that time, in July of 2008, campaign year. No, don't move it. Back in July of 2008. Oh, okay. In July of 2008, when he was under a subpoena. Karl Rove was under a subpoena to testify before Congress about his crimes. He didn't even bother to show up. I mean, you could look it up. It's July 10th, as I recall. He was supposed to testify. And this is what Nancy Pelosi is talking about when she says she could have had him arrested. He was supposed to testify about his role and what he knew about the White House outing a CIA agent, which is like the highest form of treason you can imagine. And instead, he leaves the country and goes to Yalta. And so at that point, now just, you know, we're back here, July 2008, Karl Rove goes to Yalta. What's he doing in Yalta? Yalta is, you know, where Roosevelt and Churchill and Stalin met to sign the, you know, to sign the treaty that ended World War II. What's Rove doing there? Well, there was this fancy schmancy meeting of heavy duty political hitters in Yalta, including Mikhail Shalikashvili, who was the president of Georgia. And he was in the room the same time Karl Rove was. Now, nobody knows, you know, there's no transcript of any conversation that they had. But that happened July 10th, 2008. A couple of weeks later, Georgia and South Ossetia, Ossetia and Abkhazia are in a war. I mean, you know, a real war, and Russia is taking the side of the two breakaway republics, and Saakashvili in Georgia, he's, you know, our buddy, I guess. So Karl Rove shows up. A couple of weeks later, there's a war, and then John McCain goes strutting around. In fact, let me find the actual. This is pretty amazing. This is from the New York Times. August 26th, 2008, Michael Cooper, the caucus. The headline, McCain criticizes Obama's response to Russia. Rove was in Yalta, by the way, with a guy named Randy Shuneman, who was an advisor to John McCain. So McCain comes out, this, you know, Dateline Phoenix. McCain gave a speech to veterans here Tuesday in which he accused Senator Barack Obama of being confused about America's global role as a, quote, defender of the oppressed, end quote. This is in the New York Times. Mr. McCain said, if he really thinks that America somehow set a bad example that invited Russia to invade a small, peaceful, and democratic nation, then he should state it outright because that is a debate I welcome. He went on to say, the next president must bring to office a clear-eyed view of our nation's role in the world as a defender of the oppressed and a force for peace. Now, this was the only time McCain actually got a bump in the polls. And a month later, guess what happens? Dick Cheney goes to Georgia and gives Saakashvili, who had met with Rove 2 months earlier at Yalta, gives him $1 billion. $1 billion with a B. Here, have some, and you know, that goes a long way in former Soviet Republic of Georgia. And Karl Rove, what was Karl Rove supposed to be doing when he was in Yalta? He was supposed to be testifying before the House of Representatives about his role in outing a CIA officer. Treason. I'm going to come back to this and lay out, you know, my final thoughts on what's going on with Eric Holder and this small-time criminal, Daryl Issa, right after this, 15 minutes past the hour. Who should really be in front of Congress? And how should the Democrats be responding?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And why is it that Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats are always doing what's best for the country and the Republicans are always doing what's best for their party?
Shoulda, woulda, coulda. Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Okay, so Nancy Pelosi says, I could have arrested Karl Rove anytime I wanted, but it wasn't the best thing for the country. Eric Holder. Excuse me, Daryl Issa says, Eric Holder doesn't say how high when I say jump. Actually, he has. You know, Karl Rove didn't even show up. He went off to Yalta and, in my opinion, was conspiring with the head of a foreign government to have a war in order to help John McCain. I realize it's a fairly serious charge. Carl, prove I'm wrong. But Eric Holder has shown up 8 times. And he answers respectfully the questions that are being put to him by this former small-time criminal, Daryl Issa. One of the, I think he's the only, maybe one of the few members of the House of Representatives who actually has a pretty sketchy criminal background. So here's the problem. And it's a real problem. Nancy Pelosi should have arrested Karl Rove back in 2008. I realize it was during a presidential campaign, but she should have arrested him. When he was scheduled to testify and they had the empty chair there and Congress convened and then his aide or whatever came in and said, sorry, Mr. Rove is in Yalta right now. He's not available to testify. And the press reported it like, well, you know, Mr. Rove couldn't testify because he was out of the country. They should have held him in contempt and they should have arrested him. The Democrats keep doing what they think is best for the country, while the Republicans keep doing what they think is best for the Republican Party and to hell with the rest of the country. And tragically, playing nice with bullies may seem like it's the best thing for the country at the time. I'm sure Nancy Pelosi thought that genuinely not arresting Karl Rove was the best thing to do. You know, it was like, hey, let's not have a fight. You know, can't we work this out? In the long run, it's really not best for the country. The New York Times did some pretty good reporting on this, and what they found was that the White House was actually prepared for a Karl Rove resignation, maybe even an imprisonment, but at least a resignation in disgrace, a Nixon-like resignation by Karl Rove over his role in outing a CIA officer to cover up his and Bush's lies about the WMDs in Iraq. Let's keep in mind, this all goes back to whether or not Saddam Hussein had uranium, remember? And Joe Wilson says, no, he didn't. And so they say, okay, well, let's punish this guy. We'll go after his wife. I mean, who does this kind of thing? The mafia.
Yeah, we're going to take out this guy's wife.
And, you know, Karl Rove helped put this plan together. He was at the center of it. He refused to testify about it. The White House was making plans for his, shall we say, untimely departure, assuming that the Democrats were going to push the issue. But then Rove said, okay, let's play hardball. I'm going to call Nancy Pelosi's bluff. And the Democrats wimped out. And now the roles are reversed, only instead of wimping out, the Republicans are going in for the kill. I mean, if Republican House Speaker John Boehner schedules and holds a successful vote in the House of Representatives to hold Eric Holder in contempt of Congress, this will be the first time in the history of our republic that a cabinet officer has been so charged. Just like when Republicans in Congress went after Bill Clinton for lying about getting a little under the table with Monica. That was the first time a president had been attacked for having had extramarital sex in the history of the republic. I mean, the bottom line, these Republicans are thugs. And the Democrats need to recognize it. The Republicans held unemployed people hostage last year. Remember that? They succeeded in extorting from the Democrats a cut in unemployment benefits from 99 weeks down to 74 weeks. Knowing that that would cause unemployment benefits to start to expire now in June and July and August and September and October and November, running right up to the election just in time to upset and hurt, but mostly to PO a lot of Americans who are going to blame it on who? Of course, the guy in the White House. And right now with the jobs bill, the road repair bill, they're holding the highway bill, they're holding almost 2 million road repair jobs hostage, while Republicans in the states continue to lay off firefighters and teachers and cops nationwide in an effort to make the economy as bad as possible. If the Democrats had held Karl Rove accountable for his crimes, he might not right now be wielding a $400 million club against the Democrats across the nation. Instead, he might be sitting in jail. Harry Truman once said, if you want a friend in Washington, D.C., buy a dog. He was right. He gave Republicans hell, and he won. Democrats, it's time to wake up and realize these Republicans are not your friends, and they are not friends to 99% of Americans. It's just very simple. And here's, you know, further evidence of this, right? Scott Walker. Scott Walker comes right out and says it. I mean, just comes right out and says it. I find this amazing. This is over on TPM today. The headline really says the whole thing. But have you heard? Actually, before I even give you Scott Walker, Rick Scott, the Romney campaign has reached out to the governor of Florida, the Republican governor of Florida, and said to him, stop bragging about how you're improving the economy. Because our narrative is the economy sucks and it's all Obama's fault. And if you say the economy is getting better, that's going to help Obama. It's going to hurt Romney. So stop bragging about an improving economy. Scott Walker said he was on TV last week, or a breakfast with reporters. He said the uptick in some swing states' economies could be a serious obstacle to defeating the president. He says on the surface level, obviously voters feel better if the economy is better. In Walker's case, he thinks Republican governors are to thank for the better-than-average numbers, right? He said, but that can be a tough message to sell in a presidential election. In other words, we can't talk about the economy getting better or even being decent. That wouldn't be a good thing. That would be a dangerous thing. That would be an awful thing, right? If we talked about the economy getting better, people might think that Obama's stimulus had something to do with it. It did. And they might think that Republicans are trying to make the economy worse. They are. And they might see through the lies that Romney is telling. Oh, maybe they will.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So what do you think it's going to take to get the Democrats to start behaving like Harry Truman and give them hell? So welcome back. How do we shake up the Democrats? How do we say, hey, you guys, Harry Truman did it once. Right? He said, I don't give the Republicans hell. I just tell the truth they think it's hell. Franklin Roosevelt. They hate me and I welcome their hatred. In fact, Roosevelt elaborated on this substantially. These economic royalists say that we seek to bring down or end the institutions of America. Actually, there's a clip called FDR Five Clips. This one is the fourth in the five on that one piece. It is so good. And we will get to that. But so how do we get the Democrats now to understand this, that being on the offense, and I'm not, I don't want Democrats to turn into Republicans. I don't want them to say, you know, we'll put the party ahead of the nation. I don't think Harry Truman ever did that. I don't think FDR ever did that. I don't think Jack Kennedy ever did that. What they did when they called out the Republicans, was they just told the truth. So how do we get them to do that? It's going to be a challenge. Dale in Everett, Washington. Hey, Dale. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to take exception with something that you said earlier. You called Daryl Issa a small-time criminal, and I got to say, when your criminal enterprise makes you the wealthiest person in Congress, you're a big-time criminal, and you've worked hard to earn that title.
Well, I think most of his money was actually made manufacturing car alarms in China and selling them in the United States. Am I wrong about that?
Well, I think he pretty much financed his whole entire life with the money that he stole from the insurance companies by setting fire to previous businesses. So I think his whole financial empire based on the criminal enterprises that he started.
Yeah, of course, this is an allegation. He has not been convicted of that, but it sure looks mighty odd. Thank you. Thank you, Dale, for your thoughts on that. Howard in Miami. Hey, Howard, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good.
The Democrats just drive me crazy because they describe, it's like they're a boxer describing their own defeat in the ring. They talk about what's happening to them. Oh, they did this to us. They did that to us. They did this to us. And there are no positives, no specifics. People have to know specifically how they are getting screwed so they will be pissed off. Like the Education Act that Obama passed when he signed the health care bill, that's going to save the people $68 billion over 10 years. So we who send our money to our government to provide benefits to our children are going to save $68 billion. And Mitt Romney says he's going to put the banks back in. Why does anybody think that's a good idea?
By and large, the press, the media doesn't cover this that way, though. I mean, this is one of the big problems, is that you've got corporate media with interlocking boards of directors with these same banks.
I agree, but the Democrats, when they're in front of the camera, can say it.
Yeah.
And if
actually, a lot of them do frequently. Those news conferences, I get the press releases on these things. You know, Sherrod Brown is out there every day, Bernie Sanders every day. A lot of these guys are out there talking like this. The media just goes, yeah. But once a Republican says something a little outrageous, man, it's all over the place.
Well, the Miami Herald is a perfect example. They had an article about Obama defends auto bailout. And then the article went on to discuss how he was touting the success. But for the people who are just scanning through the paper, they think, oh, another failure that he had to defend.
Right.
They constantly...
Or another bailout that he had to defend. Right.
No,
let's merge in people's minds Obama bailout and then, you know, implicitly the banks.
It drives me nuts. When they had the all those tragedies and from the natural disasters in New England, the Republicans wanted to gut an automotive program in order to provide $3.5 billion of disaster relief. And that automotive program was endorsed by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and National Association of Manufacturers because it had created 60,000 jobs already and was going to create another 43 because it was only halfway done.
Right.
And it's not reported like that.
No, it's not. And the Chamber of Commerce, Obama might have thought he was getting some friends when he said, sure, I'll go along with this, thanks for your help or whatever. But no. They will take his money and then turn around and kick him in the butt. And that's what they're doing. I mean, they're spending a fortune on this. Thank you very much for the call, Howard. Appreciate it. Sharon in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hey, Sharon.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about the Democrats and how we tend to say, oh, they're weak, they won't stand up, they don't do this. But it really is an aspect of the bullying of the right where they'll bully the left, then they bully the media, and then you know how the little guy that won't defend the person getting bullied because they don't want to, they want to look like they're cool like the bullies or whatever. So the media actually is to blame for all of this, I think, because they let the right bully and push and say the most outrageous things on TV, like, oh, Obama's a Muslim or he's a liar or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and they're the left. Anybody on the left say anything negative, they will get beat up.
Yep.
Not only by the bullies, but the press who wants to look good to the bullies, or else they're going to get bullied too.
And this goes back to a strategy that one of Roger Ailes, who brought about Fox News, who back in the Nixon administration was an advisor and edited a proposal for GOP TV, which is now known as Fox News. A contemporary of Roger Ailes, Lee Atwater, who is now deceased, he died of brain cancer, but I think they'd probably be about the same age now even. Although I could be wrong, but Lee Atwater, you know, back a couple of decades ago, described this as working the refs, the referees, and that what Republicans should do is anytime the media had a story that had seemed to be at all favorable to Democrats or progressive points of view or anything like that, that the whole right wing machine should come down on them like a ton of bricks for being, quote, biased. And
they do that.
And,
Just like the health suits. I mean, the health care thing. They got to these town halls, and they were out there just cranking and yelling and you know, and then as soon as all that died down, then, you know, they go back under the woodwork and you don't hear from them anymore. But
they will be back. They will be back.
We try to do something good. We never make it on the news.
I know. And it's unfortunate. Sharon, thank you very much for the call. Well said. Alvin in Greeley, Colorado. Hey, Alvin.
Hi, Tom. First, I wanted to say I'm a precinct committee member in my local party, so I'm doing my part to take over the Democrats.
Good on you for joining and becoming a precinct committee member.
Yes, thank you. And my question is, do you think that the Republicans are trying to lay the groundwork to impeach Obama?
Of course they are.
Yeah.
Of course they are. I predict that if he is reelected, there will be multiple impeachment charges brought against him in the second term, because that's simply how they play the game. Alvin, thank you for pointing that out. You heard it first here, right? This is incredible. This is incredible. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hi. The enforcement of major laws can't be underscored enough. And you look at you play the Dirksen LBJ tape fairly often to show that Nixon was committing treason. Had that LBJ spoken up right then, if Nixon had been stopped, Karl Rove would not have gotten going. Karl Rove got going with Nixon.
Yep.
And you can trace the whole thing of Bush becoming president.
And so did Roger Ailes, by the way.
Yes. Roger Ailes, Bush, certain things about Reagan, the Iraq-Iran things, all these things would not have happened, perhaps, if LBJ had just spoken up. Because Karl Rove got a start then, and all this stuff that's happening with Karl Rove today, on and on and on, would have happened had we just enforced the law once. Gerald Ford didn't bother. On and on, we let things go. But then we don't prevent the future problems.
Yeah. And in fact, do you have that, Shano? Okay, this is Lyndon Johnson. Apropos of what you're talking about here, Jeff, because somebody might have just tuned in and doesn't know what you're talking about. We just learned last year that when Richard Nixon was running against Hubert Humphrey in 1968, Lyndon Johnson had negotiated peace with the South Vietnamese and the North Vietnamese, and Richard Nixon jumped in there and told the South Vietnamese, don't do it, and I'll give you a better deal after the election. And they blew it up, and the war continued. And here's LBJ having a conversation with Everett Dirksen, the leader, the Republican leader of the Senate. Maybe not.
Here's the latest information we got. The agent says that they just talked to the boss in New Mexico. And that he says that you must hold out. Just hold on until after the election. We know what Chu is saying to them out there.
Yeah.
We're pretty well informed on both ends. Now, I'm reading their hand, Everett. I don't want to get this in the campaign.
That's right.
And they oughtn't to be doing this. This is treason.
I know.
Yeah, they oughtn't to be doing this. This is treason. And elsewhere in the tape, Lyndon Johnson says, you know, if the American people knew about this, they would be shocked. And he went to his grave not talking about the fact that Richard Nixon had blown up his, Lyndon Johnson's, peace negotiations with the South and North Vietnamese in order to win the election. And by the way, that's how Nixon won the election. Jeff, thank you very much for calling and pointing that out and giving me the opportunity to play that clip again. Every American should know this history. Every American. And this is where it all began.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So how do we get Democrats to wake up to this? Well, frankly, Alan Grayson, I think, has a lot to say about it. He'll be with us in the third hour of our program. Okay, a little earlier I mentioned this clip by FDR. This is how Democrats used to talk. This is the President of the United States referring to the fat cats who are bankrolling, who were in 1936, he gave this speech in July of 1936, who were bankrolling the Republicans. Here you go.
The royalists I have spoken of, the royalists of the economic order, have conceded that political freedom was the business of the government, but they have maintained that economic slavery was nobody's business. They granted that the government could protect the citizen in his right to vote, but they denied that the government could do anything to protect the citizen in his right to work and his right to live.
Okay, so that's kind of the setup. Here is where he just comes right down on them like a ton of bricks.
These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. Our allegiance and our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power.
Requires the overthrow of this kind. Can you imagine if Barack Obama went on national television and said, look at what the Koch brothers are doing. Look at what Shelley Adelson is doing. These guys are throwing hundreds of millions of dollars into presidential politics. This is a kind of power that should not stand in the United States. Our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power. It not only got an applause line for FDR. He was elected four times as president of the United States. Four times. Rodney in Schuyler, Illinois.
No, Chicago Heights.
Oh, Chicago Heights. All about her. Hey, Rodney, what's up?
Hey, you know, you was talking about the Democrats that, you know, they play nice with a bully and, that's a perfect example, that clip of FDR. He was dealing with the bullies.
Yeah.
But you can't reason with a bully. What you do is to a bully is you kick him in the naughty bits. When he lurches forward in pain, you grab him by the ears and knee him in the nose repeatedly.
And that's what FDR did. I mean, he had these guys on the mat.
That was fantastic.
Yeah.
And they're holding the transportation bill hostage. And I'm a union laborer that hasn't worked in 3 years. And because of my age and my union affiliation, I can't get another job.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is in large part the consequence of 30 years of Reaganomics, 30 years of an incessant, unremitting, unrelenting war against working people in the United States. Thank you, Rodney, for the call. Well said. Scott in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
Good. What's up?
Hey, regards to the conversation on Holder, you know, versus Rove, how you compared those, I believe that the listeners have to call their congressman and remind them of the reticence of Democratic congressmen and senators to play hardball with Republicans and how this affects our government and society.
Yeah.
And as it emboldens the enemies of the people.
Yep, it's time to take names and kick ass, and it just has to be done. Scott, well said. Mike in Atlanta. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Tom. I feel the exact same way. I mean, I called Mrs. Pelosi's office. I mean, she's so tough on so many issues.
Yeah.
And she really dropped the ball on Karl Rove. And I got to be honest with you. I hope that if President Obama gets reelected, that he starts playing hardball with these guys. Instead of thinking that they're his friend, he's got to realize that they are his enemy. They do not like this man.
Yeah.
And if Mitt Romney, God forbid, gets elected, and the Democrats don't do the same thing to him that the Republicans are doing to President Obama, they've lost my vote. I will never vote for him again. I don't care if I lock this country up for the next 10 years.
Yeah, this is the problem. I mean, if you walk away like that, then you are condemning yourself and your kids, if you have them, or future generations, to living in an America that increasingly is looking like Somalia. I mean, it's just the, you know, tearing apart this country. But I get your anger, and I share your concern. Elizabeth in Inkster, Michigan. Hey, Elizabeth, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I love your show. I'm calling in because I want to talk a little bit about the FEMA camps, and I know we discussed it a little bit in terms of the allegations, you know, the conspiracy theories caused by the brought up by the Republicans. But I don't want to gloss over that issue because there's some important things that haven't been touched on. The Republicans control most of the military. The military are the people who put the barbed wire facing in, mind you, on the FEMA camps. I say facing in because if you were putting barbed wire up to keep people...
Elizabeth, even Glenn Beck went out looking for these things and couldn't find them.
Okay, well, they're
on YouTube.
I mean,
the king of the conspiracy theories. They're not out there. What you can find, and you can see the pictures on the Internet, is that there are some old decommissioned prisons and some decommissioned military facilities that used to be, you know, military camps that are no longer in use that are surrounded by barbed wire. And the government has said, okay, we've got these facilities. You know, thousands of people could live here if they needed to. Let's just hang on to these rather than tearing them down in the event that there's a national emergency or national disaster. But they're not refurbishing them. They're not fixing them up. They're not putting new barbed wire in place. And there's just a couple that have those kinds of pictures that you can see. And they would, and even those are not actually official FEMA camps. They're not even associated with FEMA. They're just, you know, old government facilities that are no longer being used. But this whole elaborate conspiracy has been developed around these things. And it was developed, by the way, during the Bush administration. So if there was any truth to it that I could discern, I'd be at the front of the list telling you about it. I don't think they're there.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. You might remember last week when Michigan State Representative Lisa Brown had this to say during a debate over an anti-abortion bill being pushed by Republicans.
I have not asked you to adopt and adhere to my religious beliefs. Why are you asking me to adopt yours? And finally, Mr. Speaker, I'm flattered that you're all so interested in my vagina, but no means no.
Her comments, or perhaps just using the word vagina, so shocked her mostly male Republican colleagues in the House, Michigan House of Representatives, she was banned from speaking on the House floor for the rest of the legislative year. Here's one of those male representatives, State Representative Wayne Schmidt, giving his take on why Representative Lisa Brown was banned from speaking.
It wasn't about body parts. It wasn't about dissent. It wasn't about anyone's religious beliefs. It was that last comment that it took a step too far, and that's what crossed the line about the...
No means no?
Yeah, the no means no comment went a step too far. And it's, you know, as I said on someone up north here, I said, it's like giving a kid a timeout for a day.
And, oh, we've lost the audio for the rest of it. Okay. Well, the talk show host that he was talking to then says something to the effect of, you know, really doesn't, you know, that kind of upsets women. So in fact, he says that makes women angry. Well, frankly, it should make women angry. This guy must have been horrified, this Republican, when Nancy Pelosi was the Speaker of the House. Here we have an elected female representative speaking out on behalf of her female constituents' right to choose. And because she said, and it wasn't even, actually, it wasn't even that, and because she said something her male colleagues didn't like, she's described as having had a temper tantrum and a need of a timeout, as if she was 5 years old. And then she's barred from speaking again on the House floor for the rest of the year. That's blatant sexism. And it's found a cozy little refuge within the Republican Party, the most powerful bastion of patriarchy in America. You might have noticed the picture that's all over the web showing various Democratic women like Bella Abzug or Hillary Clinton in an unflattering pose versus various Republican women who, you know, mostly ladies from Fox News and whatnot, who look rather hot. And checking out the flattering pictures of the Republicans versus the unflattering pictures of the Democrats. The point of that picture, or that set of pictures, which has just, you know, it's gone viral over the last couple of years. It's all over the place. Republican women, Democratic women. Is that Republican women are better than Democratic women, basically because they're hotter. than Democratic women. They're more attractive. You see, from the point of view of Republican men, women are only valuable when they're attractive, and they become unattractive when they're speaking their mind about protecting women's rights or the rights of working people or the rights of minorities. So you don't so much hear such things coming out of the mouths of Republican women, especially over on Roger Ailes' GOP TV. I mean, have you ever watched Fox so-called news? The point is, if we want our nation to be all it can be, women must be full members of society and have full power in both the political and economic realms. And because they are women, they have a unique perspective that's crucial, unique from men, that's crucial to our national debate. In fact, other countries have already figured this out. The United States now ranks 78th in the world in female representation in government. Rwanda, which ranks first in the world, has women making up 53% of its government. Women have been instrumental in rebuilding and healing that nation, Rwanda, which lost a tenth of its population in just 100 days of male-started and male-executed genocide in 1994. In the United States, we have just 17% female representation in government. Other nations are not so backward. Sweden, Finland, the Netherlands, Norway, Iceland, Denmark, Spain, Germany, Canada, the UK, the list goes on and on of nations that have more female representation in government and thus, and here's the really important part, achieve better results than we do here in the United States. When it comes to health care, when it comes to wealth inequality, when it comes to poverty reduction, when it comes to education, when it comes to overall life satisfaction, you name it, they get better results. And of the top 20 countries that have the highest female representation in government, 17 of them broke up centuries of patriarchy using the sledgehammer of a quota system that requires a certain percentage of women to be part of government. And once that goes into place, guess what? The outcomes get better. A recent UN report on women in politics found out of the 15, and this is quoting from the United Nations, out of the 59 countries that held elections last year, 17 of them had legislative quotas. In those countries, women gained 27% of parliamentary seats compared to 16% in countries without quotas. End of quote. A recent study out of the University of Oregon found that nations with more women in government have even lower carbon dioxide emissions. Another study out of the World Bank found that the higher the levels of female participation in government, the lower the levels of corruption are. You know, the funny thing is, the first Americans, those people who were living in North America before the Europeans showed up 500 years ago, the first Americans, the Native Americans, already figured this out. Within the Iroquois Confederacy, upon which our founding fathers modeled our democracy, women enjoyed freedom and a lot of power. The result was a federation, a nation, that pretty much had no war. They played week-long games of lacrosse to resolve conflicts, and that provided a very high quality of life for all their members. Iroquois women owned land, and they were largely responsible for shaping the community's social, economic, and spiritual direction. And while the sachems, the tribal elders who traveled from nation to nation, you know, every year to communicate with each other, were normally men, they were nominated and elected to office and held to account by women who, in four of the five Iroquois nations, were the only ones who could vote. Ben Franklin went off on this at the Constitutional Convention. And this is, I'm paraphrasing this from memory. I know it's not, this is not the verbatim original quote, but it's awful close to it. And, you know, Sue has posted it a couple of times, I think, over on our website. I should have it in front of me to read it, but this is close. Franklin said words to the effect of, "It would be an odd thing if five nations of ignorant savages," and he didn't mean that as an insult, by the way, "are able to forge a bond that has kept them in peace for hundreds of years, but 13 colonies of educated Englishmen could not do the same." And he said this, you know, with 34 members of the Iroquois Confederacy standing there in the room. Excuse me, it was a little over a dozen members of the Iroquois Confederacy standing there in the room with the men who were writing the U.S. Constitution. Compared to their colonial counterparts, Iroquois women enjoyed far more freedom and power. And it's time today that women have more freedom and power in our current government. But that means we need to call out these Republican men who think it's appropriate to give their female colleagues, quote, time out for throwing temper tantrums, end quote. These Republican men are quite simply dinosaurs. They're anti-female bigots. And eventually their war on women is going to catch up with them. In fact, it may well be happening right now. I think, you know, all the blowback against Limbaugh for his Sandra Fluke comments, I think that the fact that 5,000 women showed up in Michigan last weekend in Lansing, in the state capital. I mean, I grew up in Lansing. I never saw 5,000 people show up for anything. I lived there 27 years. Nothing. Well, maybe a football game, right? I mean, sporting events, of course. But politics? Well, maybe actually some of the Vietnam War demonstrations. But it's pretty amazing. I think people are waking up to the Republican war on women.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Do you think they are? And do you think that a quota in the United States like they have in Norway would be a good idea? We have to have a certain number of women legislators.
I'll show you just how cool scientists are. We study everything, that's why we're cool. And yes, most of us got high marks in school. And proud.
It's our Geeky Science Ride. My 2 minutes during the week when I can talk about one of my favorite topics, science, instead of politics. We will get right back to politics within 2 minutes. But this is you ever heard of the web of life? And this whole idea, you know, we're all interconnected and things have impact on each other. They did a study this is from Agence France Presse, and the study was done both in the United States and Israel. Researchers in these two countries collaborated on this study, where they took grasshoppers, and some of them they put in a cage with spiders who had their mouths glued shut. Now, spiders eat grasshoppers, so putting the spiders in the cage with the grasshoppers terrified the grasshoppers. They spent their lives in terror. And then, you know, they didn't get eaten by the spiders because the spiders had their mouths glued shut, constantly had to put new spiders in because the spiders were starving. And, you know, eventually the grasshoppers died of old age. And then other grasshoppers, they just put them in a normal cage and, you know, they died of old age too. And they then buried these grasshoppers in the dirt, which is what happens when grasshoppers die, right? They fall into the dirt, and they get mixed up with the soil, and they get eaten by the bugs and bacteria and things. Listen to this. This tiny difference between the two, between being frightened and not frightened, caused plant matter to decay much more slowly than it did in comparison with using grasshoppers who died more peacefully. Right, the graves of the grasshoppers who were frightened. Well, here's the first sentence. Grasshoppers who die frightened leave their mark in the earth in a way that more mellow ones do not, U.S. and Israeli researchers said Thursday. Now, there is there's a chemical basis for this. The being afraid increases the nitrogen level, or decreases, one or the other, of the grasshoppers by about 4%. But I just think this is wonderful. I remember back when I was 16 and I became a vegetarian, one of my points that I would tell people about why they shouldn't eat meat was that virtually all meat that we eat comes from sentient mammals. I mean, it comes from animals that have enough self-knowledge to know that they're about to be killed. And they're terrified. And their bodies are pumping out all these hormones, you know, adrenaline and adrenochrome and all the cortisol, all this stuff, these stress-associated chemicals. And you eat that meat, and those are chemicals that cause stress in us, too. So you can explain it biologically, neurochemically, or you could explain it by kind of karmically, which is how, you know, Buddhism has explained it for 3,000-4,000 years. Oh, you know, they've got the vibration of fear of death, and so when you eat them, you will get that vibe and you will experience that. And now with grasshoppers, they've demonstrated that. So, anyway, there you go. Back to politics. Cindy in Long Beach, you wanted to make an announcement about corporate personhood?
Yes. Yes, Tom, how are you? I'm a member of the Yes We Can Democratic Club in Long Beach.
Oh, great.
And we're focused, just like you are, on both the inside and outside game.
Mm-hmm.
We're involved in electoral politics and movement politics. I was calling today to let your listeners know about a great event we're having here in Long Beach this coming Saturday evening, June 23rd, to address the dangers of corporate personhood, the problems with money in politics, and how to fix it. We have a panel that includes Angelique Kronheim of Common Cause, mm-hmm. Daniel Lee of Move to Amend, and Mary Beth Fielder of United Republic, and somebody on the inside, State Senator Alan Lowenthal.
Oh, great.
We're inviting the leaders. We're inviting leaders of political, environmental, labor groups, because our goal is to provide them with information and a real action plan so they can take it back to their respective organizations and get everybody moving. Any group leaders interested in attending this should send an email to info@ywcdc.com. And we would love to have you there. So I thank you so much for giving me the time.
Great. You're welcome. Thank you for the call. And thanks, Cindy, for your activism. It's marvelous what you're doing. Tim in Ann Arbor. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I'm thinking about this whole contempt vote thing and, Nancy Pelosi saying that, she could have arrested Karl Rove, but that he didn't. And I'm going, well, why the heck didn't she,
Yeah.
I think it was
an opportunity lost. I think that there was a genuine belief that maybe we can work together. And I honor that instinct, and I think it's a marvelous thing. But you have to realize that the Republican Party today, well, even the Republican Party of FDR and Truman's time, they didn't, they did not play softball. They were playing hardball. And Harry Truman and FDR played hardball back at them and won. And that's what Democrats need to do today. Thanks for the call. Tony in East Hampton, Mass. Hey, Tony, we have a minute to the break. What's up?
Hey, I just have two comments. First of all, throughout history, when women have said things that men don't like to hear, they call the women hysterical.
Yes.
And if they can, they lock them away in institutions.
Yes.
And second, I think you might consider changing one of your taglines from "the best government money can buy" to "the worst government money can buy." And thank you so much for the work you do. We watch you, we listen, we do what we can, and we appreciate
everything
you do.
Thank you very much, Tony. And I think that, to Tony's point, I find it fascinating that in 1890, I think it was 1892 or thereabouts, it might have been 1889. Anyhow, around that time, Sigmund Freud and his colleague Brown, B-R-A-U-N, I forget his first name, but Sigmund Freud published a book called Studies on Hysteria. This was his seminal work. And virtually the entire book was based on his psychoanalysis of one woman by the name of Anna Oh, who he ended up institutionalizing because she was hysterical. What was she hysterical about? She was pregnant. By whom? Either Freud or Brouwer. Very interesting. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Back with your calls, 27 minutes past the hour. How do we bring about gender equality politically and economically in the United States? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, boy, there is just, it's an amazing time in America. I don't know how to say it beyond that. Pat in Wisconsin. Hey, Pat, what's up?
Well, I want to address exactly what you're saying. Last night on our Madison News, my congressman, Tammy Baldwin, who is frankly awesome.
She is.
There's just no other word for her. Is running for the Senate seat in this state. Herb Kohl is vacating. And fat, bloated, messed the government up Tommy Thompson, who was governor for 12 years, is running ahead of her by 6 points. Now, he looks like some kind of a dinosaur. And she's fresh and young and hopeful, and she's done so much for my district. And I fear that he's going to win because this is an aging state. It's an afraid state because the NRA ran ads about how Tom Barrett was going to steal the guns from the hunters in this state. And that fed into this whole craziness of electing Scott Walker again. And I'm public service employee, so, you know, I'm kind of not happy with that. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, this is an example. And I know they're going to do the thing that's going to hurt her the most. They're going to say, oh, my God, she's gay. And that will taint her without looking at what an awesome candidate she is.
Yeah, and a hero as well.
Oh, I just can't say enough about Tammy Baldwin. I know her personally. I've worked on her campaigns, and she's just stands up for the middle class more than any other person I can think of, and against war, and she's just progressive in every sense we want. Kind of a Russ Feingold.
What's the website for her campaign?
I don't have it handy. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, if you Google Tammy Baldwin, it'll pop right up,
Tammy,
I'm sure.
Tammy Baldwin, and she's running for Herb Kohl's office.
Okay, great. So if you're inclined to help out, check it out. Thank you for the call, Pat.
Thanks
for the heads up. I appreciate it. Jill in Denver. Hey, Jill. Thanks for listening to AM 760. What's up?
Hi. I was watching Bill Moyers and Company at midnight. Thanks, PBS, for putting him in an awesome time slot. But I know, fantastic show always. And he had on, I think it's Thomas Frank, the guy that wrote What's the Matter with Kansas?
Yes, we have over at Conversations with Great Minds. You'll find a half-hour conversation I had with Thomas Frank
excellent.
Last year. Yeah.
Yeah, and he has a new book out, by the way, that sounds really good. But one of the things that Bill and Tom were talking about is that the war that Democrats need to be fighting first is the way that elections are run.
Mm-hmm.
Because until we correct all the despicable things that Republicans are doing to win elections with nothing but corruption and lies, we're not going to be able to pass any other laws that matter to us. And I really have been kind of preaching that for a few years, that election reform is number one. And the other thing that's number two is media consolidation needs to be undone.
Yeah.
That was a disaster for this country.
Well, not just media consolidation. We need to go back to the pre-Reagan era when shopping centers and downtowns were filled with locally owned businesses instead of national chains.
Yeah.
And we need to be breaking up all of these large conglomerates.
Yeah, there's stores down in on Pearl Street in downtown Boulder where everybody goes, lovely outside walking mall.
Mm-hmm.
There are stores that have been there for 25 and 30 years that were local businesses got closed last summer, and it was just tragic.
It really is, and it's very hard to compete against a national conglomerate that can drive you out of business. You know, they can just drop their prices long enough to drive you out of business and then jack them back up when they control the marketplace, which happens regularly. So thank you very much for the call, Jill. Excellent point. Dusty in Portland. Hey, Dusty. Or in New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm sorry. Dusty,
hey,
what's up?
How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, first off, I really wanted to agree with you on the Nancy Pelosi not throwing Karl Rove in jail.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of sent me over the edge when she, one, took impeachment off the table, then she didn't throw Karl Rove in jail the minute he touched down at National Airport from Yalta.
Right.
She had a chance to really tell the country and the world that we don't take treason lightly. And what would have happened to him, either guilty or not, would have said, you know what, we're just not going to take this lightly. You don't out agents and walk away from it.
Yeah.
And you don't get a do not go to jail pass. You get busted for it, and we don't take that lightly. So I just wanted to say that for one thing. And another is Republicans have shown beyond a shadow of a doubt is they don't really care about national security. What they don't care about the people on the ground, the agents themselves. What they care about is the apparatus, the machine, the Z corporations, the Halliburtons, the Northrops, the Globals, and all the security organizations. They don't actually care about our ATF agents, our CIA agents, and the people who are actually gathering intel. They just care about the corporations.
Oh, it's an elite perspective. The Republicans are all about who has the power, who has the money. And
right.
the workers, I mean, regardless of whether they're working for the CIA or whether they're working for Walmart, workers?
Yeah. They don't care about the working people on the ground.
Right.
So that's just something that has incensed me for a while, is, and that's what ICE is doing, is I care about the guys who make the guns, not the guys who are shooting the guns.
Yeah. Yeah, and thank you. Well said. Shano made the analogy, and I think it was a very good one, that what Fast and Furious and what was the program before that? Not Double Wide, something. Wide Receiver, thank you. What these two programs were trying to do is essentially the same thing as putting marked bills into currency. You know, it's like buying drugs from a drug dealer and giving them marked bills to find out, you know, when that drug dealer takes it to his drug dealer and then he takes it to the big kingpin and then he busts the kingpin and he's got the marked bills. I mean, that was the kind of sting that was going on. But in any case, Richard in Evanston, Illinois. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Oh, hello. You know, you were talking about Kissinger and the recent, this little history lesson, I guess, about the recent disclosures through the tapes with Johnson.
Yeah.
And actually, I read about it in 1983. Seymour M. Hersh wrote a book, Price of Power, and right on the first few pages, like 14, starts talking about how Kissinger was working the Democrats and Republicans, persuaded the, this is 1983.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time I've heard anybody mention it. So I went back to the book and looked at it just now. And he was working both sides, Democrats and Republicans. They got, I think it was two turn down the offer.
Madam Two, yeah,
and
that's what Lyndon Johnson says. He says, we know what Two is saying, yeah.
Yeah, and Seymour Hersh put this in this book, and it turns out that the deal that they eventually got was the same deal that was arranged. So all those people died thanks to Henry Kissinger and Nixon.
Yeah.
And they'd never, and then now, in the, of course, you know, Kissinger can't go to Europe, right? He had to flee Paris, remember, because of the Spanish are after him, but he's free to wander around this country. And all those people died because of him, and it's in this book, and it's only a year ago is bizarre that, you know, no one has paid any attention.
Yeah. There's a great movie that's worth seeing. It's called The War Crimes of Henry Kissinger, or The War Trial of Henry Kissinger, one or the other, and it's been some years since I've seen it. It's been around for a while, but it's shocking. And to your point, Richard, thank you very much for the call. Well said. Yvonne in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Yvonne, what's up?
Yeah, hi. Compatible with your marvelous recording from FDR's speech and comments you've been making about the role of women in government,
mm-hmm.
I want to warmly recommend a book called The Woman Behind the New Deal.
Oh, yeah, Frances Perkins.
The Life and Legacy of Frances. Oh, the author is Kristen Downey. That is a wonderful book.
I read that book when it first came out, about a year ago, I think it was. And in fact, I got it on my phone. I read it on my phone, and
great.
And it's so well written. I mean, not only is it an incredible story, and was Frances Perkins an extraordinary woman, but it is so well written. I could not put it down. I read that book in two days, and I stayed up half the night. I mean, I stayed up until like 3 o'clock in the morning reading. I just could not put it down. And then the next morning I got up and I'm reading it over breakfast and I'm, you know, it's just an amazing book. You're right. The Woman Behind the New Deal, Frances Perkins, and the making of, what's the rest of the title? I don't have it in front of me.
Well, The Life and Legacy of Frances Perkins.
The Life and Legacy.
The Woman Behind the New Deal. Responsible for workmen's compensation, for Social Security, for an array of the remarkable programs that he initiated.
Excuse me. Finish.
Yes. Well, how she managed this man who had, you know, came from a privileged background, did not himself have personal knowledge of these issues as she did.
Right.
And how she was successful in getting them through.
Yeah, she was absolutely brilliant. It's an incredible book. And it also, you know, she was also responsible for all the alphabet soup agencies, the WPA and CCC and everything. I mean, you know, she was also the first female Secretary of Labor in the history of the United States. I mean, FDR put her in that
12
position.
12 years she served. 12 years in that job.
And several times she tried to leave, and he begged her to stay on. The stories of how politics worked inside the White House and how it's just a story. It's an absolutely compelling read. You're absolutely right. behind the New Deal, the story of Francis Perkins. Yvonne, thank you for the heads up on that. And great to hear from you. 45 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Back with more of your calls. And actually, we're going to check in with the Talk Radio News Service and find out what's going on in the world from them. And then we're going to talk to a congressman with some serious guts, Alan Grayson, in the next hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So bolt down your chair and you know, slick down your hair, because Alan Grayson's going to come on and blow you out of your seat in about 15 minutes. Taking back the mainstream media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by the German Embassy, that wants you to know that Germany supports the European strategy to strengthen the euro through fiscal stability, solidarity, and growth. You can learn more online at germany.info. Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Good, Tom. How are you?
Very well, thank you. What's up? What's happening in the world?
I want to start with today. Everything under the sun. The Supreme Court has dealt a blow to unions and general public employees unions, but the SEIU in particular, over a small amount of money, but it was a 7-2 vote. And basically, this is an issue around a long time, but it just they're saying that the unions must win approval in advance from dissenting members before they can collect extra dues in the mid-year to pay for political campaigns. I don't think it'll be too far-reaching, Tom, beyond, you know, maybe dealing more with special assessments, but it was just it was such a to-do over such a small amount of $6 collected in a month's period of time.
Yeah.
But then the indecency case of the Supreme Court came forth, which they said that the FCC has overreached on the First Amendment, and they need to they've run afoul of the process by failing to give networks advance fair notice that they've actually broken the rules. And this isn't the Janet Jackson case, but this is just the decency right. in general. Labor, on the other hand, although dealt a little bit of a blow by the Supreme Court, they have targeted the Midwest. They're actually getting engaged and geared up after Wisconsin and Ohio after the moves against the unions. So they've announced today a pretty massive grassroots, not just money, effort to target. And, of course, Tom, as you well know, the news of the day, which is going to amount to nothing, is Eric Holder and the whole the contempt, which people are trying to figure now what they want to do. I'm sure Romney are not, at the end of the day, happy if this continues too long. And Speaker John Boehner came out today and said, look, don't gloat if the Supreme Court rules next week against President Obama and, quote, Obamacare. Don't gloat. Now, I don't think, Tom, it's because he's such a gentleman. I think it's more that he doesn't know what to do if, in fact, if that happens.
Well, my understanding of what the Republicans intend to do is they're going to pick up the pieces of Obamacare that everybody likes. They're going to rebrand them as the Republican health care bill and push them through with broad approval. And suddenly they become the party of the good guys, even if it's, you know, undoable and unsustainable. They'll promote that.
And they'll have an amendment process, which for them could be ugly, but more good for public policy for people. So I think Boehner, like one of the radios said, well, you know, he's just trying to be classy. No, he has a reason. He's not trying to be classy. He has a reason.
Yeah, yeah. But John Boehner always has a reason when he does something.
Always.
That's how he got to be Speaker of the House.
That's correct.
Yeah. So what
but
else is going on?
Major news. Tomorrow, Ray LaHood is going to have some type of big announcement about transportation funding, President Obama's Secretary of Transportation. Of course, the Commerce Secretary has stepped down that has the medical problem.
Now, does LaHood's press release or press conference tomorrow, do you think that that has something to do with the fact that 1.9 million people who, like, fill potholes around the country, the transportation workers, are that transportation bill is being held hostage by the Republicans in the House of Representatives?
You know, he's making an announcement to discuss a major funding announcement, so it could go in that direction. You know, I served with Ray LaHood. He was wonderful on transportation issues. He's good as the cabinet member. A lot of Republicans like it, but you know, they're blocking it on the other hand in the party.
Isn't Ray LaHood the only Republican in the cabinet?
Yes, he is.
That's interesting.
Yes, he is. So I think maybe his announcement at least maybe put pressure or light that there are a lot of things going haywire in transportation that simply don't need to do it. Bush did this with Andy Card. and we overturned him in the Congress, but now, you know, they've let others have their way.
Yeah. Okay. Good. What else is up?
Tom, that's about the major things that I actually have today.
Okay. Great. Bob Ney. Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service. Bob, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great talking with you today. Today's Talk Radio News Service report brought to you by the German Embassy, which wants you to know that Germany supports the European strategy to strengthen the euro through fiscal stability, solidarity, and growth. Learn more online at germany.info. And just a reminder coming up in the next hour, get ready, because Congressman Alan Grayson, former Congressman Alan Grayson, he's got a really interesting story to tell, and I'll just let him tell it. Charlie in Dayton, Texas. Hey, Charlie, what's on your mind today? No, Charlie. Okay. Randall in Pré-du-Chien, Wisconsin?
Pré-du-Chien, Tom.
Pré-du-Chien.
How are you today?
Wisconsin. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. Here we're talking about women and democratic power and what to do to stand up. Our Chief Justice here in Wisconsin, Shirley Abramson, was attacked by a Republican Justice, David Prosser. Actually, her neck was just accidentally thrust upon by his hands.
Yes, she was physically attacked.
Yes, and if things had been a little different, say Barrett had been elected the first time around, Walker, and he'd gotten his way according to what they said, and he'd outlawed guns, which is asinine because he wouldn't have the power to do anything of the sort.
Right.
But if he had, and Shirley'd been attacked and she'd been concealed carry, she wouldn't have been able to pop him in the head with her fist or with what she was carrying concealed.
Okay.
So we need to take those things to the Republicans and point them out and say that, look, things work both ways, not just one.
Yeah, okay, good point. Randall, thank you very much. Sonny in Darien, Georgia. Hey, Sonny, got a minute to the break. What's up?
Hey, Tom, I'd just like to offer the suggestion that we need, and we need it desperately, an organized Christian left with emphasis on the teachings of Christ. I myself am an agnostic.
Yeah. Do you know about the United Church of Christ?
No.
Okay.
I'm truly an agnostic.
There is a Christian left. And
well, it ain't organized. It needs
organized. It's semi-organized, but sort of like everything on the left, you know, it's not.
Well,
they're not marching in lockstep. But they're, you know, between them and the actually, you know, there's been a lot of progress in the Methodist and the Lutheran denominations, and then of course, you know, just for folks who like to sit in a church, I mean, there's the Unitarian Universalists. They've got it's a very progressive church. Although that's not a Christian denomination, but I think that I think you're right, and I think that it has emerged. Sonny, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be back with Congressman Alan Grayson. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, if you're concerned about Mitt Romney's dog and you want to help out, check out congressmanwithguts.com. Alan Grayson, former Congressman Alan Grayson on the line with us from Florida's 8th District, congressmanwithguts.com, the website. Help us out or Mitt Romney's dog will suffer?
Yeah, no, we sent out that email yesterday, and we pointed out that the way things are going, if Mitt Romney gets elected, it's quite possible you could expect that Mitt Romney's dog, who you might have heard was tied to the top of Mitt Romney's car, will end up being tied to the top of his limo as he goes down Pennsylvania Avenue.
Oh, that would be even worse.
Being sworn in. It'll be tied to the top of his helicopter.
Ooh.
Which is very dangerous.
Yeah.
On his way to Camp David.
Right.
And it'll be tied to the top of Air Force One.
Oh, and that's
in flight.
Yeah.
So all of those
that's
things
cool.
will happen only if Mitt Romney gets elected. How do we prevent that? Well, we can support the president, but as it turns out, you can also support our campaign because our campaign is in Central Florida. And as Florida goes, so goes the nation. As Central Florida goes, so goes Florida.
Yeah.
We're already doing field work, signing up people to vote, signing up people for absentee ballot requests, signing up good Democrats and making sure they get to the polls. So my point was, if you want to see Mitt Romney's dog safe, that means Mitt Romney has to lose, And if you want to see Mitt Romney lose,
help
you should go to our website, Congressman with Guts, and show your support.
There you go, congressmanwithguts.com. Alan Grayson, former Congressman Alan Grayson, you are running for election again.
Yes, that's right.
Is with
about
us,
half, the district is new. It's one of the two new districts in Florida, but about half of the people in the district are people whom I represented before.
That's
I represented a West Orlando district before. Now this district is oriented toward the South.
I wanted to talk with you about this whole Obamacare thing. I find it amazing.
I read the bill. Ask anything you want.
Okay. I find it amazing that $230 or $260 million has been spent trashing Obamacare, much of it by social welfare groups. And I put that in quotes, 501c3s, that like Karl Rove's and whatnot. And only some $60 million has been spent in support of it. It seems to me that this really has nothing to do with Obamacare, that what it really is all about is trashing the president. This is his signature accomplishment by proxy in a way that doesn't cause them to run afoul of IRS laws so they can maintain anonymity. Do you think, which then speaks to the whole issue of money in politics, your thoughts on that, and also I'd like to get into, you know, what do you think might happen if the Supreme Court knocks this thing down? But first this.
Well, the same thing that you're describing as an attack on the president has also been an attack on our campaign. We faced, among all the people who are actual nominees of their party, I already won the Democratic nomination for my district. Among all of those people, I was the first one to face these independent expenditures, these outside ads that came in and attacked me by associating me with Obamacare. And what the ads said, these were Chamber of Commerce ads, and they started running them at the beginning of May, 6 months before the election. What these ads said was that people should not support me because I support Obamacare, and Obamacare will take away the current insurance for 20 million Americans. It's hard to believe they could be that disingenuous. The punchline is it will take it away and replace it with something better.
Yeah.
20 million Americans now have policies that don't even meet the minimal requirements required under Obamacare, so they'll be replaced with policies that actually do. But, of course, they didn't mention the 30 million people who will actually get health care under the president's plan. They want to mislead people into thinking that it takes coverage away from people rather than giving people coverage they don't already have. The
right.
President's facing that. I'm facing that. That's why we're running a money bomb at our website, congresswithguts.com, this week, to try to get support to fight back and fight back against the lies. These are selfish corporate propaganda lies being spewed out everywhere against the president, against me, against any progressive who's running for Congress now, and we have to fight back.
Yeah, absolutely. And they seem to be actually working. And this is the biggest tragedy, is that now we're seeing increasing numbers of Americans, when you look at the polls, who are saying, yeah, I don't think I like Obamacare. They don't know anything about it, but they've seen enough ads on TV from these right-wing groups and these business groups that they know that they don't like it. What would you say to those people?
Well, I would say that you need to know what's actually in the bill. As I said, I read the bill. Let me just point out some of the good things that are in the bill. And I say they're good things because it's almost universally everybody says they're good things. One thing that's in the bill, which people are now familiar with, is the fact that under pre-existing law, pre-existing conditions could mean that you wouldn't get your coverage, or if you did get your coverage, you wouldn't get your care. So now insurance companies are no longer allowed to deny on that basis. Another thing that's in the law that people like is the fact that there are no more lifetime caps. It used to be that the health insurance companies could literally pull the plug on you when you're in a coma in the hospital because you got too expensive for them. If they had a policy with a lifetime cap in it, that meant the end of your life.
Right.
They can't do that anymore. Another thing that's in the bill that people really like is the fact that the donut hole is being closed for senior citizens. The senior citizens had to pay thousands of dollars each year for the drugs that in many cases they needed to stay alive. The donut hole is now half closed. By 2014, it will be entirely closed. All of those bills will be paid for through Medicare and not by senior citizens out of their own pockets.
Another thing
that's just starting up soon is the affordability credits, the discounts that people get on their insurance to make sure that their insurance does not exceed 11% of their income. And people will be getting these affordability credits all the way up to $88,000 a year of family income. I could go on and on. These are all things that poll extremely well. And this is what Obamacare is. But people meaning the media, are obsessed with the mandate. and they don't want to talk about anything else when, in fact, these other things are what's really important. These other things are what keeps insurance affordable, what makes insurance better, more gives you the actual care that you need, and also what extends insurance to over 30 million Americans who don't have it now.
Now, with regard to this closing of the donut hole, I had a senior citizen call into the program a week or three ago saying that they had gotten a check back from either their health insurance company or the drug companies that they were very pleased about. They thought that the health insurance companies or the drug companies, whoever had sent them the check, was now like doing the right thing for them, and that Obamacare might take that away. Wasn't this part of the process of the closing of the donut holes, and have these companies been using this in a disingenuous fashion?
Well, that's a different element. The donut holes are closed by the Medicare program substituting for the money people have to take out of their own pockets.
Okay.
What you're describing is something that is really insidious on the part of the drug companies and the healthcare companies. The bill set a simple standard. If you're providing health insurance in America, at least 80% of the money that you take out of people's pockets to provide that care has to actually provide that care.
Right.
You know, you could have 20% for your corporate profits, your advertising, or exorbitant executive salaries, or whatever you want. But 80% had to provide that care. Now, if there's a difference, then you have to give a rebate back to your own clientele. I think that's probably what the caller was describing to you. That's strictly a function of the bill itself. If the bill goes away, or if the bill is repealed, or it's found entirely unconstitutional, then they will never see a check like that again.
Yeah, and this company did not say, we are being forced by Obamacare to give you some of your money back. It was more like, here, we're so generous, have some cash.
Yeah.
We're talking with Congressman Alan Grayson, congressman with guts.com is his website. Congressman, we have about 30, 40 seconds left. Your message to the American people, please.
Oh, we have to change our priorities. You know, we have to concentrate on the things that matter in our own lives, jobs, health care, education. These are the things that actually matter. We have to stop being distracted by other issues. We have to bring about an America with justice, equality, and peace.
Yeah, it's a great list. And to do that, we need to get some genuine progressives elected to Congress, like Congressman Alan Grayson. Go to congressmanwithguts.com and check it out. Congressman, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. I enjoy the show tremendously. I listen all the time.
Thank you very much. 15 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back with more here on the Tom Hartman Program. How do we get more congressmen with guts elected? Step by step. Show up.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I mean, here's a guy who's really fighting the good fight. We need to be recognizing that and supporting that and identifying others.
When we're living here in Allentown, and they're closing all the factories down, out in Bethlehem they're killing time, filling up forms, standing alive.
Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Ron in Vidalia, California. Is it Vidalia or Visalia?
It's Visalia.
Visalia. Thank you, Ron.
Yes.
Not the onion capital.
I talked to you before, but Visalia is the home of Kevin Costner when he went to high school.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, think of us in that way.
Okay
on Nancy Pelosi and mm-hmm. why she would not, indict or
hold Karl Rove in contempt of Congress.
Yes, right. Yes. Are you familiar with the Raker Act?
No, I'm not.
Okay, the Raker Act in 1930, when Hetch Hetchy was built, that was built by an engineer for the city of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And it was built to bring water to San Francisco, owned by the people. Anyway, the Supreme Court, it went on and on. What happened was they ran out of money on the power part of it
mm-hmm.
when the power lines were into Newark, close to San Francisco. That was where PG&E's lines took off, and mm-hmm. this is in the 30s. So anyway, PG&E put in the last couple of miles into San Francisco, and they own the power. In other words, they privatized that.
Right. Well, what does this have to do with Nancy Pelosi not holding Karl Rove in contempt of Congress?
Well, every politician in San Francisco are owned by the largest utility in the United States, which is PG&E. The Supreme Court said that the power belonged to the people right. in San Francisco. They've never enforced that.
So what does that have to – so you're saying the PGE is convincing Nancy Pelosi to not go after Karl Rove? Yeah. That seems like a stretch to me.
No, PG&E owns the politicians in San Francisco. So how can – when they are just as corrupt as any other politician.
So your argument is that Nancy Pelosi is corrupt. You know, Ron, there are a number of politicians that I would buy that about, and Nancy Pelosi isn't one of them. I mean, I'm certain she has her blind spots, and they probably have to do with donors because this is, you know, this is what the Supreme Court has bought us or brought us or both.
My point is, if it was a law by the Supreme Court in the 1930s, right. okayed by the Supreme Court, why haven't they enforced it all these years, and why is PG&E
Ron, thank you for the call. I don't understand. I don't understand why PG&E would care about Karl Rove. George in Tampa. Hey, George, what's up?
$1 trillion more for our health care system, thanks to Obama, and a mandate that makes 50 million people new victims. You call that progress?
Well, I wouldn't describe it that way.
Well, that's the way it is. The people didn't want it, and he didn't open up the hearings to the people. He didn't let the people
I would submit to you, George, that if you ask people if they want to have decently priced health insurance, or actually for people making under $88,000, which I'm guessing is you, free health insurance, that most people will say, yeah, it sounds like a good plan.
But it's not free because somebody has to pay for it, Tom.
Yeah, you've got some really rich people in this country. We've got a lot of money flowing around this country.
We've
got some very large corporations.
Obama.
Say what? Say what?
He hasn't raised their tax yet.
This is one of the things. There's a viral email that's going around, George, that has everybody all hysterical, particularly on the right, all the people who watch Fox News and whatnot. That says that, did you know that if you sell your house, you're going to have to pay a tax to support Obamacare?
That's not true.
It actually is true. But it's only true if you earn more than $250,000 a year. And it's not just on the sale of your house. It's on the sale of any large, you know, it's on capital gains. It's on anything that you sell that you make a profit on. So if you sell stocks, if you sell your house, whatever, it's a very, very small tax. And, you know, I mean, it's I think, less than 1% or less than 2%. But the point is that there, you know, he did go out. He actually has raised some taxes on rich people to make Obamacare work. And I think I'm fine with that, frankly. I don't understand why you're not.
They keep talking about nobody will be denied care anymore because of precondition.
Right.
But what they don't tell you is that the ensign said that their ensign got an amendment in there that says that they can charge you anything they want to charge you. So that's the way they get around not keeping people out that have conditions. Hell, if they could charge you anything they want, somebody's going to have to pay.
George, you're misinformed. The Obamacare requires that 80% of all the money that the health insurance company takes in goes out to pay for health care benefits. So they can't just arbitrarily raise prices. They can't arbitrarily.
They can charge you what they want for pre-existing condition.
They can't. You can't. They can't single you out. You have to be part of a larger risk pool. George,
they can charge you what they want.
No, I'm sorry, George. Go to Snopes.com and look it up.
I know. Instant amendment got in. Senator Ensign got that amendment in the Senate, and Obama never fought against him.
Yeah. George.
They can charge
This is not a panacea. What I would like to see is you know, the very simple one-sentence health care bill that says the age for eligibility for Medicare is now birth, is zero, right? That's the health care program that I'd like to see. But the fact of the matter is that this is a hell of a lot better than what we've got right now. And yes, it is. And
it's
the
it's a $1 trillion more money, and 50 million new victims.
Victims. The victims, George, are the Koch brothers. Do you make more than $88,000 a year? No, you don't. And
you're so not even close.
Yeah, so you know this is going to help you, George. This is a program that's going to be of tremendous benefit to you. I really strongly suggest you learn about it because you're shooting yourself in the foot.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And well, we'll see where this goes. Stick around. We'll be right back. 27 minutes past eight. Time for the good, the bad, and the very, very catawampusly ugly. The good. Representative David McKinley, the Republican from West Virginia. McKinley, a Republican from West Virginia, recently sent out a mailer to his constituents. In it, he expresses very similar concerns as Democrats have with Paul Ryan's House GOP budget. The mailer says McKinley voted against Ryan's budget because, quote, of the plan's negative impact on northern West Virginia seniors, end quote, and because it proposes to preserve the Medicare cuts the Democrats only backed in order to help to pay for Obamacare, he says. In a time when the Republican Party, actually there are no Medicare cuts in Obamacare. In a time when the Republican Party has shifted to the far right, it's nice to see that there are still one or two in the grand old party who want to stand up and do the right thing for the American people. The bad. Apple. Apple stores have twice refused to sell Apple products to Iranian Americans. According to a report by WSB-TV, Sahir Sabet, an Iranian-American, was told by store employees in a Georgia store that it is corporate policy not to sell any goods to Iran without the authorization of the U.S. government. Sabet repeatedly told the store employees that he was an Iranian-American, but it didn't matter. And at a store in Virginia, Zach Jafarzada wasn't allowed to purchase an iPhone because workers heard him speaking Farsi to a friend. There's already enough intolerance and hatred of the Arabic community in Arabic-speaking community in America. Apple shouldn't be helping to create more of it. And the very, very ugly Karl Rove. Actually, you know, the Iranians are not Arabic-speaking. They are Farsi-speaking. But you get it, anyway. Karl Rove, with his Crossroads GPS and American Crossroads Super PACs, Rove has already done enough to help destroy the American democracy, but now he's making flat-out mockery of it. Rove will be attending and speaking at a Mitt Romney retreat this weekend for high-end donors, which is reportedly an opportunity for strategizing and fraternizing among Romney backers. Rove's Super PAC plans to spend upwards of $300 million to help Romney beat President Obama in November, but by law, they can't associate or coordinate with Mitt Romney or his official campaign. So it seems like by attending the event, Rove is very close to breaking the law, but of course, he doesn't care. This man has almost single-handedly brought down our democracy with his millions, and now he's making a mockery of the few laws left to protect it. That is very, very ugly. Pretty amazing stuff, actually, when you consider it. John in Sacramento. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I would like to talk about the electorate and how we have dumbed down this society, and the electorate keeps voting against their own self-interest. I'd like to know what can possibly be done about that.
I think that that's a damn good question. It doesn't lend itself well to simple answers. The dumbing down of our
simple at all.
Yeah, the dumbing down of our electorate really, in a big way, began with the end of news in 1987, when Reagan stopped enforcing the Fairness Doctrine, and said that radio and TV stations no longer had to provide news in order to get their licenses renewed. They could provide infotainment, and so we moved from being a well-informed citizenry, which is to paraphrase Thomas Jefferson, to being a infotained citizenry. You know, where if, flying saucer boy goes off, balloon boy, then it's all balloon boy 24/7. Or, you know, if Miley Cyrus or Janet Jackson or something has a wardrobe malfunction, that's the news of the day. And we have that as a problem. You've got the Supreme Court starting in the 70s after 1973, after Richard Nixon, put Lewis Powell on the Supreme Court, the court aggressively moving to establish the doctrine that money is not property, it's speech, and that corporations aren't artificial entities of the law, they are persons. And, you know, so there's this kind of collection of things that together have served to dumb us down, and we need to be pushing back on all of them. I think the main thing that you can do is just educate everybody you know. We need to get out and speak up, and step by step, is we have to do that. Thank you for the call. Amber in Jefferson City, Missouri. Hey, Amber, what's up?
Oh, Tom, you are my hero.
Thank you.
You are my hero. And I don't want to cry, but I'm a Latino lady. I'm 87 years old.
Oh, my.
I served 3 years in this country. And I'm going to answer a question that was asked about priests in the Catholic Church. As long as there's a pope and bishops, you will never see a woman priest, ever.
But we need a female pope. Is that what you're suggesting?
Pardon?
That we should have a female pope or female bishop?
You'll never see a woman a priest, ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm neutral. To me, it doesn't matter. But you will never see a woman priest.
Yeah.
I think
you're right, Amber. It's been that way for a couple thousand years, and I doubt the Catholic Church is going to change it in our lifetimes.
I'm glad you agree with me, and I'm going to tell you I love you dearly.
Okay. Thank you, Amber. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Mm-hmm. Michelle in Manitou, Colorado. Hey, Michelle, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I think you're great.
Thank you.
I just want you to know that I'm confused about why the Republicans are, like, in line with the Taliban in the way that they look at women. I mean, it's almost the same thing, and I don't know what to think about it, and I wanted to know what your thoughts were on it.
I think it's the same reason that the Taliban are, you know, oppress women. I think the Republicans do it for the same reason, a fundamental insecurity. Men are basically insecure. You know, men are the weaker of the two genders. You know, men don't live as long. Men can't deal with pain as well. You know, if a man had to give childbirth, I mean, it's inconceivable, right? And so I think that there is this fundamental insecurity that leads to patriarchy. And those societies that are not patriarchal, that are either matriarchal and matrilineal or are egalitarian, men realize that their worst fears are not realized, and, you know, they don't get disempowered, or as Freud would say, castrated or whatever. But I think that there's just a lot of insecure men out there, and, you know, somehow we've got to reach out to them and say, women are not your enemy. Thank you for the call, Michelle. I appreciate it. It's a big topic. Scott in Atlanta. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, before I ask my primary question, can I just comment on what Michelle said first?
Sure.
I think that's a bit extreme to say that Republicans mean to treat women like the Taliban do, because, you know, I know you have to agree that the way the Taliban treats women was stoning them and things of that nature. That's a bit much.
Okay. I'll give you that.
I mean, come on.
But I would submit to you that the Taliban's treatment of women and the Republican Party's treatment of women are literally coming out of the same foundational psychopathology.
Well, we can agree to disagree on that.
They're being acted out within the constraints of their cultures.
Well, America's it's a big difference between the two. So that wasn't the purpose of my call. The main purpose of my call was I'd like your input on we're spending trillions of dollars. America's trillions of dollars in debt. When is enough spending enough to meet the needs or, you know, the direction of the progressive movement? When are we there? Because I don't know how much money we had to borrow from China to redistribute to the people, but it seems like it'll never end.
Yeah.
I'd like your thoughts on that.
Well, let's start out with this myth about the debt. I realize that you have been suckered in, frankly, by a guy named Jude Winiski, who back in the 70s said what the Republicans have to do. Here's the problem that the Republicans have had for years and years. They opposed the minimum wage. They opposed the weekend. They opposed the 40-hour work week. They opposed the 50-hour work week. They opposed the 40-hour work week. They opposed health and safety standards in the workplace. They, you know, Republicans have always been the party of no, of Scrooge, basically. And they've always been in favor of things that have benefited the fat cats and the very, very wealthy. And this is not a disputable topic. And so Judah Winiski came out and just said this honestly in the 1970s. He was a major Republican strategist. This was after the Goldwater campaign went down in flames and after Nixon was impeached. And the Republican Party was in shreds. And he said, the Democrats have always been viewed as Santa Claus. And the Republicans have always been viewed as the Grinch. So what we've got to do is figure out a way to make the Democrats shoot Santa Claus and in the process make Republicans Santa Claus. So here's how you do it. Whenever there's a Republican in the White House, spend like a drunken sailor. Spend like there's no tomorrow. Run up as huge a debt as you can. And the minute a Democrat comes into office, and what that'll do is it'll stimulate the economy, it'll look like good times, and you have huge tax cuts, especially for the rich, but for everybody, you have tax cuts. And so you get to be the tax cut Santa Claus. And then as soon as a Democrat comes into office, scream like a stuck pig about the deficit. Now, the fact of the matter is that, and they've been doing this, by the way, there was never a word about the debt while Reagan tripled our national debt. One president in 8 years borrowed more money than every president from George Washington and Jimmy Carter combined.
Who voted? Who created the bills? Who was involved in the spending?
Mostly Republicans. Mostly Republicans.
Democrats in Congress.
It was mostly Republicans. Go back and look at the votes. Go back and look at the votes during the Reagan era. All of this spending was massively and overwhelmingly Republican. And what you are seeing is Jude Winiski's theory being played out. The fact of the matter is that after World War II, when Dwight Eisenhower became president, our debt was 127% of GDP. Right now, it's only 90% of GDP. How did Eisenhower get us out of that debt? Do you know, Scott?
$80 billion.
He borrowed and spent like crazy to build a national
You're
highway system.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video.
And Dwight Eisenhower then went on to build roads and to build highways and to build schools and to build hospitals. And all of that generated so much economic activity, we paid off the debt. We can hope. We can definitely hope. Dana in Mountain View, California. Or Hawaii. Excuse me. Mountain View, Hawaii. How are you, Dana?
I'm okay. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to respond from the guy regarding the health care issue and how he was saying that it was just ridiculous that we would even try it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an Obama supporter. And my situation personally is that I'm 51. I worked all my life. I paid my taxes. Currently, my father passed away. I'm currently taking care of my mom. I took care of him before he died of cancer. Mm-hmm. And my situation is I'm going to have to quit my job to take care of my mom. And I was getting health care through my job. And I'm praying that the Supreme Court does the right thing with, you know, what the health care really stands for so that I'm supported when I'm not able to get health insurance and, you know, that.
Well said. Well said. And that's the very real issue that we have to look at. Thank you, Dana, for the call. Is whether health care is a right or a privilege. The Republicans would have you believe that it's a privilege. And if you're a member of the Lucky Sperm Club, if you're born into a rich family, then, hey, you have the privilege of getting health care and health insurance. I would submit to you that it's a right. And every other developed country in the world, except ours, explicitly says that it's a right. So, Joan in Shingletown, California. Hey, Joan, what's up?
Well, I just read The President's Club, which is a very good book, by the way. And I was struck by the fact that the president that leaves office helps the incoming president. And the book covers each president, successive president, certainly since Truman.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to really thinking about it and realized, at least I think, that the last truly great president, if you say by great, president who's accomplished good things, would probably be Lyndon Johnson.
I agree.
Because, and, oh, good.
And I was horrible. Yeah, no, and I got gassed and beaten up out in the streets protesting Lyndon Johnson, going, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today?
Right.
If you could take away the Vietnam War, which Johnson tried to do in 68,
yeah.
He had successfully negotiated a peace with the South Vietnam and North Vietnam, and Nixon came in and blew that up. You know, we played the clip earlier today. And of LBJ having wired, you know, having the CIA having intercepted communications between the Nixon campaign and Madam Tu. But if you could take the Vietnam War out of the equation, you look at the Great Society, it was the New Deal Part Two.
Yes.
He cut poverty in half in the United States in 5 years. I need not go off on it all. I mean, you know, is it Medicare, Medicaid, all these programs that Lyndon Johnson started. I think he was genuinely a great president. I agree with you. Is there a question?
What bothers me is, you know, the succeeding presidents. If you look at their accomplishments, they really weren't that, you know, that great. And my question to you is, if you could tell me, is what do we do to get candidates for the presidency that really are qualified and will really do good things for the country, that aren't just there because it's some sort of an ego trip or a way to make money and have power?
Yeah. Think about this for just a minute.
Okay.
Joan.
Mm-hmm.
You and I would probably agree that FDR and Lyndon Johnson were great presidents. What happened just before FDR and Lyndon Johnson came to office? In both cases, there were massive social movements. When Franklin Roosevelt came to office, the Bonus Army had been camped down here on the Potomac from the front lawn of the White House all the way down to the Potomac River for, you know, half a year, giant Occupy movement. Hoover had them run out of town, but there was just this massive social movement that was going on, this huge upheaval against poverty in the United States. And so FDR had to respond to that, and he did, and that made him a great president. Similarly, when LBJ became president, Martin Luther King had brought a social movement, to roll back 100 years of apartheid, you know, that was the moderation of 400 years of slavery. And so there was this massive civil rights movement, this massive social movement that Martin Luther King was a part of. But there was a huge and multidimensional movement. And Lyndon Johnson was responding to that with the Great Society. So it's not a matter of having the great president. Lyndon Johnson and Franklin Roosevelt were competent men. But Franklin Roosevelt, frankly, ran on a platform of, you know, let's not do a lot and let's be very conservative and balance the budget. It was the pressure of the people that brought him forward. And similarly, Lyndon Johnson, I mean, when he was a politician down in Texas, he was a petty man. He was,
mean-spirited.
I can give you a long, in fact, there's a book called A Texan Looks at Lyndon that was written, you know, back in the 60s that just takes him apart. But he became a great man because the pressure of the people were behind him. And that's what we need to do. You and I need to do it. It's not a matter of finding that great man and electing, or great woman and electing her, you know, Hillary Clinton, whatever it may be, to presidency. We have to create a social movement that has so much pressure, like the Bonus Army did in 1932, and like the Civil Rights Movement did in the 1960s, that the president has to respond to it. Joan, thank you for the call. It's up to us. Coming up tomorrow, it's Friday, it's Brunch with Bernie. America's Senator Bernie Sanders will be here talking about all the important issues of the week and taking your calls in a national town hall meeting. Plus, anything goes on Town Hall Friday, what's on your mind. And we'll have the best of the rest of the news in your calls. And don't forget, as I just mentioned to Joan, democracy begins when you show up. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.